I'm Alan McGuire.
I'm Andrea Kearney.
And this is Juvenalia, a podcast where we talk to an interesting person about a bit of pop culture that was important to them when they were young. Our guest today is the author of Spirit Level, Richie Craven. Welcome to the show, Richie.
Hi, thank you. Welcome to the jam.
We are so pumped. We are ready to hit him high. We are ready to fly like an eagle.
Thank you for having me on. Long time listener, first time caller. It's good to be here.
Richie, for anybody who doesn't know, is the author of one of the two canon greatest stories in Irish Twitter history, the Marks and Spencer's Christmas Eve food story. So familiarize yourself with that if you haven't come across it before.
I would argue that the Desperados or the Dicey's My Limes tweet is an honorable third to that.
That's flash fiction. You and Seamus have the long form entries.
Okay.
It's a different genre. The My Limes. I think about it every time I see limes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Every time.
It's punchier. She achieved in one tweet what I could only dream of with 35 or however long that story is.
So when you told me your topic, I was very excited because it was something that I genuinely have not revisited since I saw it originally when I was like 12 years old. It is Space Jam. Please tell us why you have picked Space Jam as your topic today.
So, yeah, this came out when I was, I think, 7 years old. I have no memory of seeing it in the cinema. This was a huge VHS movie for me. Me and my dad would go around to the video, as we call it, the video shop at the time. That makes me sound 1,000 years old. and he would pick something for, you know, him and my mum. And then he would let me pick, you know, a kid's movie. And I think week on week on week, I would just pick Space Jam, to the point where he had to stop me picking it because he was like, no, I can't spend money on space. So, and I think, I hope the statute of limitations has exceeded on this, but he brought the video shop version into work one day and came back with a pirated copy. Someone from work sorted him out. So then I had a Space Jam of my very own. And I was just obsessed with it. We were a big Looney Tunes house. I don't know about you guys. When I was a kid, we had all of them taped off, like all of the kind of the specials taped off of the TV. And I remember one of them included an interview with Mel Blanc, who was the original voice of all of the characters. And I was just kind of blown away that like one guy did all of those voices. And like to this day, voice actors, that's like watching a voice actor do a cartoon voice in real life is just a shortcut. It bypasses all of the adult part of my brain and just goes straight to the kid part. And I am like, I'm just clap hands every time like a entertained child.
There's that interview on I think it's Conan O'Brien, where I don't know their names, but the two from The Simpsons are on.
About to say, the first time I saw Dan Castellaneta do Homer live, I'd probably been watching The Simpsons for like 10 years at that point.
Yeah.
I think it was him and Harry Shearer, I think, both doing voices.
It was the two of them on Conan O'Brien, and they do the interview like as the characters. I only saw this like probably like 4 years ago, and my mind was like totally like same thing as you, Richie, like bypass all of the adult part of my brain that knows that this is done by voice actors. And I'm looking at it like, how is he doing that? Because it's like he's doing an impression of Homer Simpson or an impression of one of these characters. And I'm like, no, that's the guy. He gets to decide what they sound like. It's amazing.
We get a Dan Castellaneta cameo in this movie.
We do.
Which I only noticed this time around. We were obsessed with the Looney Tunes. And then I guess when this came out, I suppose from in the States, this would have been like Michael Jordan making the Looney Tunes relevant. But in Ireland, I kind of only had the broadest sense of who Michael Jordan was. Mm-hmm. So this was the Looney Tunes and then some guy who also played basketball, as far as I was concerned.
I
may have thought Michael Jordan was a fictional person until, you know, well into my well before my tweens, but this is kind of interesting now because obviously that Last Dance documentary came out in lockdown. I don't know if you guys watched that.
No, I didn't. No.
Yeah, it's just such a, because I didn't really know the extent to how just popular and everywhere he was in the 90s because of basketball. I became obsessed with basketball because of this movie. My parents, like, that year that Space Jam came out, my parents got me a basketball hoop for my birthday. And I would just spend hours in the back garden, like, trying to shoot the ball. I loved it to bits. I think I had a Toon Squad jersey. I had a Monstars jersey. And turned out I wasn't very good at basketball when I got to play with other people. But for a good, I'd say, year and a half, I was obsessed with the sport.
You were a little Michael at the beginning of the movie.
Yes. Like,
do it till you miss. But it's do it until you get it.
Little Michael with the gift of prophecy, just kind of.
The gift of exposition, yeah.
Yeah, and that's handy for me, who didn't kind of know who he was going in. I'm just going to give you a potted summary of where he was up until then. But it is funny watching that Last Dance documentary and then seeing how he acts in this. Like, from watching that Last Dance documentary, Michael Jordan wouldn't be giving an inspirational speech at halftime to that team. Like, he would be beating Daffy Duck to within an inch of his life to, you know, by all accounts, and maybe calling Bugs Bunny some homophobic slurs by the sounds of some of those interviews.
Oh, no. Oh, Michael. I anything I know about that man, I know from watching this film 2 days ago. Like, I know who he is. I know he had a very successful brand deal with Nike at some point. And I know he was a successful basketball player and went on to be a baseball player, and that is and he's very tall, and that's like the extent of my knowledge of Michael Jordan in my entire life, even though he's so ubiquitous. And like, I suppose the older we got, like, the more opportunity we'd have to, like, for him to, like, be around or whatever. Or I feel like he was, like, maybe referenced in some of the, like, maybe someone mentioned him in, like, Sabrina the Teenage Witch or something. You know, he was somebody that, like, characters in American sitcoms would make reference to, and that's the extent of my knowledge of him. And having watched Space Jam, I feel like that is still the extent of my knowledge of him. I feel like I've learned zero amount from him, but that's fine. It's okay.
Yeah, it seemed like he had this intentional kind of blank, you know, he was a great player. And then he was also like a brand ambassador for, like, McDonald's, for, like, the his assistant character played by Wayne Knight, I think, lists them all off in one line of dialogue. It was like Wheaties, McDonald's, Coca-Cola, Nike, everything in the 90s. He was the brand ambassador. And because of that, they go into this in The Last Dance. He didn't kind of, his own personality didn't really come across so well, as kind of, he was just more of the, like, he let the brand, like the Jordan brand, speak for itself.
Kind of OJ-ish. Like, that's OJ, why people didn't want to believe that OJ did it, because he was so associated with all these, like, wholesome brands, and he was OJ, do you know? It's, but very, very different trajectories in their lives.
Yeah, let's, for lawyers, let's be clear.
Yeah. OJ is better in Naked Gun than Michael Jordan is in this movie.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Bob Hoskins, he is not.
No.
This film really does make you appreciate how good Bob Hoskins is in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. That was my main takeaway from this rewatch, is that Bob Hoskins did, like, the Lord's work in that film. He was, like, channeling something otherworldly. Because even Bill Murray is not, like, doing an amazing job of being in this environment.
I want to talk about Bill Murray in this movie for conservatively 25 minutes. I hope we can clear that time.
Let's get into it, because I had completely forgotten that happens, that Bill Murray, A, appears at all, and then B, is the last minute hero of the film. Please tell me everything you want to say about Bill Murray in this film.
Well, I only looked it up coming into this. He was only supposed to be in that golf scene, but apparently this was one of the first big green screen movies of the 90s. And when, so, and I only realized it this time around as well, Ivan Reitman is the producer. So that's the Bill Murray connection, because Ivan Reitman's the producer of Ghostbusters and Meatballs and stuff. And Ivan showed Bill Murray some of the stuff they were shooting with the composite cartoon characters. And he said, "Can I do that? That looks like fun." according to this story I read. So he wasn't supposed to be the last.
Bugs Bunny isn't there, though. Like, it looks fun, but it's not.
Like, as I'm sure any actor.
Yeah, he does. He looks really. I think he makes a joke at the end when he comes to save the day at the basketball game. Someone's like, how did you get here? And he's like, oh, I called my producer or something like that. So I guess that's what that joke was.
Yeah, he was like, producer's a friend of mine and someone, what did he say? Like a teamster dropped me off. And that's the only line of, that's the only explanation we get for how we got there. And that's all I needed, in fairness.
Me too. Even like watching it as an adult, I feel like there was nearly like, like the plot of the film is it's kind of like a first pass. It's like, okay, we just need to get them to Earth and then we need the basketball game. How do we make that happen? And it's like, it was written on a whiteboard and that's what they went with and fine. But I'm kind of like, I kind of would have been fine with it just being like aliens come down and challenge the Looney Tunes to a basketball game. I don't know if I needed everything else in it. Even though I did enjoy all the famous basketballers having their talent taken away from them.
That was so much fun in this rewatch. I don't think I took it in much. The scene where they're getting for those of you listening who may have not seen it, five like current NBA players who were huge NBA players at the time play themselves, who get their powers zapped by these aliens. Zapped. The physical comedy of those like giant men and Muggsy Bogues, who was the smallest basketball player ever, pretending not to be good at basketball is incredible. Yeah. I loved it.
And they all do like a pretty good job. Like even, you know, the shots where they're kind of showing it on the news, it's like, oh, an illness has come over like five NBA players and we don't know what it is. And it's like they're playing like perfect basketball and then suddenly they just like they can't even like pick up the ball or whatever. It's really funny. And I like their little adventure that they go on, and they go see like a psychic medium to see if it's anything to do with that. And she, you know, like rightfully predicts everything that's happening. And they're like, no, we're out of here. Like all of that comedy I found really funny. I found that really charming. And I think they all did like a as good, if not better job than Michael Jordan did in the movie.
Yeah, they like, did they more, but a smaller role.
Yeah, yeah.
That sequence I really love, but there's a part in it that baffles me, which is Charles Barkley, who was one of Michael Jordan's main rivals when he played basketball, shows up, has had his talent zap, shows up to a school basketball court where some teenage girls are playing basketball, and the needle drop, the music that they play is Barry White.
Yeah, now, I think
I think the song is called like Basketball Jones. Like it's thematically about basketball, but it's just this grown man watching teenage girls play on a basketball court. And then like Barry White can only sing sexily. So it's just very, very creepy. But then the rest of that sequence where they're being psychoanalyzed, I really like that. And I think it's Charles Barkley again that's saying to God that he won't date Madonna again if she gives him his talent back, which I don't know if that actually happened.
If that did actually happen, there's a lot of very specific 1995 references in this film that didn't age or didn't like last in like the zeitgeist as long as they obviously thought it would, all this stuff.
There's one of them when they're seeing a doctor, the doctor is like, Is there any other area of your life where you find it difficult to perform? And I was like, oh, that's one for the adults. Yeah. And it was a funny joke. It was funny.
I always wonder because the Monstars, so the alien team that the Looney Tunes play, once they get the talent and they grow big, they're basically, they're kind of monster versions of those players, like some more than others. Like the guy who gets Charles Barkley's talent is a bit pudgy and that was his thing, and then there's the really tall guy, and the Muggsy Bogues character is kind of short and wiry. But I always wonder, like, somebody had to show those drawings to those real people and we're like, here is the character. And would you not be a little bit offended at like how grotesque they made. Because like the really tall guy who I don't really know very well, I think he's either Sean Bradley or Larry Johnson.
Oh, he's like 7 foot tall white guy. And he's just like, you forget he's in the scene because he's like a
pillar. Looks like a boom mic. Yeah.
Yeah, he's outrageously tall. It's insane.
But they kind of play him as like a yokel, or that character, that monster character is kind of like a yokel dim. And you'd be kind of like, well, I suppose Michael Jordan was the producer, so he was famously. I think the least believable part, and this is, you know, with aliens and Looney Tunes being interacted, the least believable part of that is Michael Jordan giving those men their talent back. I think he was going back to basketball that next year, and if he knew that, he'd be like, there's no way I'm giving these guys their talent back. I'm gonna get that ring.
One of the notes I took while I was watching it was, when was the last time you saw a film that was written by four people? That's a committee. Because it's four different people wrote it. It came up on the thing and I was like, wow, I think this is why it is the way it is. I think this is why it is four separate films. One stars Bill Murray, one stars basketball players, one is Looney Tunes, and then one is kind of like, I don't know, everything else. The bit with the dog.
There's like a whole subplot, which is, would have seemed big at the time, but again, is nothing now, where like the footnote in his career where he became a baseball player for a season is the main driving force of this film. And it's just nothing anymore. People think of Michael Jordan, they do not think of the baseball thing really at all, except as a, oh, weird, that happened, I guess, as well. Because
was he successful as a baseball player?
Not really.
No, they kind of said he was on a double, like he was on a lower level team, and they said if he had a couple more seasons, he might have made it into the major leagues, but you know, he was nowhere near as good at baseball as he was at basketball. But
I think it's such a rich guy thing to do, to be like, I'm going to go play professional baseball now. And it's like,
skill transfers. Like,
Fuck off.
But the context for why he did that in real life. So when I watched that, I didn't realize that was a real thing. I thought it was just part of the movie when I was a kid. And obviously you learn that, it was a blip in his career. But the context around that is insane, because his father was murdered the year he quit basketball. So he decided to quit basketball, and the reason he said he started baseball was because his dad was a baseball player. So it was just like this incredibly dark real life reason for why he did it. And then there was people claiming at the time that it was a secret suspension from the NBA because he was gambling so much. Because he has in real life, he has a crazy gambling addiction to the point that he has lost millions on a golf game kind of thing. And there was a conspiracy theory that this was a secret suspension from the NBA for 18 months rather than him actually going by choice. Now, he comes out and says that's absolute crap, because
I guess you could just get injured for 18 months if you really needed to. Like, you don't have to go and be a professional baseball player in order to be suspended or whatever. But that part, I guess that's like the inciting, it's like one of the many inciting incidents.
It gives us Wayne Knight's character is the PR person for that team. And I actually really like the scene where he's playing baseball poorly, but all of the baseball players are so excited that it's Michael Jordan that they're kind of like, you struck out really well. When I strike out, it's ugly. When you look good when you're striking out. I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, one of my notes was, all of these baseball players want to fuck Michael Jordan. But like,
I think he's actually quite good in those scenes.
Yeah.
I think when he's acting with humans, he's actually pretty decent, I think.
Is that his real wife? Because I thought that they had
chemistry. It's not his real wife or his real kids, which I was shocked
really
by.
Good chemistry.
I do not understand why those kids were cast if they're not actually his actual kids, because they were not good child actors. That seemed like nepotism, nepo babies, like literal nepo babies, but they weren't. They did have the same name as his actual kids, so.
Yeah.
Which is what IMDb Tools section this morning.
His wife was very like believable, and she was very charismatic. I wanted to know more about her. I was like, can't wait to get to know this person. No.
Also, I kind of wanted to see, like, she hadn't heard from her husband in 2 days and just wasn't like, no, Michael, he's fine.
Yeah. She just thought he was at the casino or whatever, or playing a baseball game, and I don't know. It's his home life, like his house is really weird as well. Like everything in this film is like slightly to the left of where it should be, I feel, when I'm watching.
Yeah, you feel like Michael really Jordan fun. Would be living in a bigger house than that. Like he looks like he's in like a suburban area in, and I suppose I don't know where he was playing, but maybe that was like his second house for where he was like playing at the time.
Yeah, he's got like neighbors. I'm like,
it looks like the same kind of house, like Jim Carrey's like house in Liar Bride. Liar. Exactly, level house. Michael Jordan house should have gates, at least, I would think.
At the very least, gates. Yeah, like,
I can imagine some kind of full-size basketball court, maybe a 9-hole golf course, probably. Yeah, yeah.
Casino just extension.
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah, casino extension. Yeah. Yeah, his house was really weird, and his kind of horrible dog, who I loved.
After his rival Charles Barkley.
Amazing. I did love anytime the dog was interacting with the Looney Tunes. That was great, and I thought it looked surprisingly well. Actually, like I don't know. So I watched this on YouTube. So I like rented it from YouTube, and I don't know if they like did one of those things where they correct it or they make it like the Looney Tunes looked a bit 3D to me. Were they supposed to, or were they supposed to look 2D?
No, in some of them they do, particularly the scene where they go get Michael's like shoes and stuff and they're interacting with that dog, there is kind of a weird, it's not really 3D, but it kind of stands out from the screen a little more than usual. The animation in this is weird and kind of inconsistent. It's fine for the most, and then the last scene of the like the monsters before they kind of travel back, they get back to being small again. It's like completely different character models. It looks like they look like they hired somebody's nephew to do it for the last few stills. All of the scenes are the Looney Tunes.
It was kind of like when in Hercules, where it's all normal, and then you get to the three-headed Hydra thing, and it's a completely different animation style. And that's kind of what it felt like, but it kind of kept flitting between the two of those things, like not quite 3D.
I don't feel like the Looney Tunes were hand-drawn, I think is the issue. I think they were done 2D on a computer. So the shading on, they've put shading on them, which is in itself weird for Looney Tunes.
Okay.
I think that's what looks weird about them, that they have shadows that they don't normally have when you consider the classic Looney Tunes ones.
But was that the case when it came out in 96?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, yeah. It's a little bit Uncanny Valley because they're trying this new thing, I think. Yeah. So it's... I feel like the newer Looney Tunes movies don't do that. They go back, or at least they've learned how to replicate the like 40s and 50s stuff in modern technology.
They know that that's what we want. I mean, let's talk about the Looney Tunes then. I thought it was really cute that Bugs Bunny was second in the credits, like the name Bugs Bunny and not the voice actor.
It was incredible.
So cute. I love that. I loved that. Because he's a guy, like he's a bunny.
Hmm.
He is like he's the co-star. He's second billing. You know, he's the second lead in this movie. He has an arc. Yeah. He gets a love interest, Lola Bunny, who was introduced for this movie, I think. And I feel
poor
like
Lola
is the
Bunny.
The female equivalent of that the fox from Robin Hood, in that like it's the face that launched 1,000 furries.
I can see that.
Yeah.
As someone who had a crush on the fox from Robin Hood, I can see how she was like the four people who like women version of that.
There was no need
loved her.
Whoever was in charge of designing that character model like really put a lot of effort into that. There was no expense spared on how sexy they tried to make that cartoon bunny.
And she does like a 1940s pinup pose when she dunks as well. the arched back and straight legs. Yeah. Like, all right, calm down.
And I
spray
guess
the water
like,
on you. Okay.
It was like watching her, like one of my notes I wrote down is Bugs Bunny is a sexist pervert. And I was really, and then like a sad face. And I was really sad. And I was like, okay, let's put myself into 1996. This bunny is good at basketball and she's better than the boys at basketball. And that's kind of where we were. That's what was happening with girl power in 1996. Like,
yeah, she didn't like being called doll.
Okay, don't call me doll, you know.
Yeah, and that's about as far as like they were allowed to be feminist in movies for children.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, fine. Does she need to be that hot? Absolutely not. But in terms of the sexual politics of this bunny, I understand why she is the way she is.
The things you never think you'll hear yourself say, the sexual politics of this bunny.
Of this bunny. We need to get into it.
I think all of the stuff with the Looney Tunes was really strong. I mean, even like we talked about the Bugs and Daffy stuff when they're trying to steal the shoes and the shorts back is really fun.
Really fun.
I didn't realize that Billy West does the voice of Bugs Bunny in this, but like had to audition for. I just assumed they would be using whoever was doing Bugs Bunny at the time.
Oh.
But they actually like auditioned voice actors for all of the roles, and some of them, like Billy West, that was the first time he did Bugs Bunny, I think. But then
he went on to do it.
But all of the stuff with the Looney Tunes and the monsters when they're little and when they're big is great. Like just the bit where the spaceship lands on Elmer Fudd and then you get the classic Bugs Bunny kind of interaction and the great line, I cannot do it justice, but we're just like diminutive, ain't they? I loved all that sort of stuff.
And I liked when Daffy wanted to call their team the Ducks and Bugs is like, oh, what kind of Mickey Mouse organization would call their team the Ducks? And I was like, hey, that's funny.
The Looney Tunes the Looney Tunes are unionized, apparently. That's we learned this movie.
Huge for very me. Good, very important. Huge. And then Daffy makes a joke later. He's like, I wouldn't have to do this if this was a union job or something. It's great. It's like, yeah, get the union together. Stunning.
The Looney Tunes always kind of had that. Similar to the Muppets, that they're kind of working like show, they're kind of showbiz working kind of thing. I think loads of WB cartoons, kind of like the Animaniacs, does that a little bit as well, where they're all it's very kind of fourth wall breaky. These are kind of performers as well, but I just they were like, it's an important Looney Tunes union meeting, and I was like, yes. Join a union. That's great.
I love the monsters when they're small. The little squeaky one, I just had my whole heart. It's just adorable. So, so cute. I kind of hated the like stonery surfy one. The one who's like, yeah, man. It felt very 90s. And I was like, I see your place in this movie, but you have not aged as funnily as... Like,
oh, the squeaky voice one is great.
She worked better big than small, I think.
Yeah.
The stoner one. She did grow on me, but initially I was like, this is very, very obvious time.
She was like a kind of a messy blueprint for that, what do you call it? Like turtle that was in Finding Nemo.
Oh, Crush.
Yeah. It's like, I can see the vision, but it's not quite like executed. I suppose there's just kind of so much and so many different characters going on that introducing a new thing is hard, but yeah, I loved all of the, like, for me, when I was a kid, I watched the Looney Tunes. I didn't watch much like Bugs Bunny or Daffy. I kind of didn't like the ones where they talk in it, so I loved Roadrunner, and I had tons of tapes of Roadrunner, and I just wish that he or she, I think Roadrunner is a she, actually, I'm not sure. I wish they were in it more. The like Roadrunner and Coyote, whenever they were on screen, I was so excited. I was like, here we go. And I kind of
Coyote
wish I got
is
to
on
see
the team, but Roadrunner isn't, which seems like on a mission. Like if you're picking, like I like what they did with a lot of like, here is how this particular Looney Tune would play basketball. But it feels like an omission to like not have the one that is whose whole thing is being very, very fast. But in fairness, they don't have arms. Yeah.
Yeah. But can just maybe like push the ball with their beak or something. I don't know. But I just love Roadrunner. But do get a couple of good gags.
Yeah, I was going to say, like maybe my favorite or maybe second favorite joke in the film is that Coyote enters the Union Hall through the ceiling and leaves a coyote-sized hole in the ceiling. My favorite joke is when the three very tall basketball players have lost their powers and they're walking through the hospital with the small guy. And they're focusing on what the doctor is saying, and all three of them knock themselves out on a doorway at the same time.
That is incredible.
Totally caught me by surprise. Really, really good.
That is really funny.
Yeah, I
really like. I think my favorite part this time, watch around, was when Bill Murray. There's two parts of it. When Michael Jordan is sucked down the golf hole, and he just turns to Wayne Knight and was like, "What kind of camera is that?" And it's just very, very.
Yeah.
And then he's like, don't point it at me. And then it cuts away from them and he's talking to Larry Bird, who was also in this movie. And he's like, I'm going to give us both two there. We were in no emotional condition to put.
That was and so funny. Any bit with Bill Murray, like talking to anybody, like, or even the whole bit where they were playing golf, I found really relaxing and I was just kind of into it and I was like following their little game. It was like a mini game inside a video game kind of thing. I was like, oh yeah, I'm interested in this, another sport. But then whenever Michael Jordan or whenever Bill Murray would talk about like him wanting to be like a professional NBA player, I enjoyed that quite a lot as well.
I feel like on the first day he turned up and like someone offered him a script and he was like, no, thank you. I'm just going to, who's here? Larry Bird and Michael Jordan. Cool. I'm just going to riff for, which is he probably behaved himself on this set more than he ever would on any, from what I hear from like behind the scenes on the likes of Groundhog Day and stuff. Like he's such a huge Chicago sports fan that like, this is probably the only movie after he got big where he wouldn't take the piss and be kind of a complete monster to everyone who was working with him. But he is incredible in this movie.
He was the highlight for me, I think, honestly. Like he was like a little breath of fresh air. I was just like, yeah, this is great. I love Bill Murray. Whenever I see him, I'm like, yeah, I'm glad he's here.
We haven't talked about the Wayne Knight of it all, that he, this is, would this be post-Seinfeld or mid-Seinfeld?
That would be just towards the end of Seinfeld. Yeah. Seinfeld ended 97, 98, I think.
He's fabulous.
It's post-Jurassic Park, though, so.
He's fabulous. He's playing the same character as he played in Jurassic Park, basically.
Yeah. He's just amazing seasoning and everything. Yeah.
He's just a professional, funny person. Like, he doesn't have to do much. I loved his car when he was driving Michael Jordan home at the beginning. They set up a joke like this dog is going to chase him at some point in the movie and then they don't do that. I feel like maybe that scene was shot and then they didn't use it for some reason. But he's...
This movie's only 75 minutes long, so I don't think there must be...
It's so short.
There can't be that many... I feel like I'm criticizing a lot of this movie and I just want to say that I am stating... like objective things that are wrong with it, but the lizard alien part of my brain still loves it with every fiber of my being. I'm pointing out all of these things that are wrong with it, but I'm also like 10 out of 10 perfect film.
At the opening credits are like set a 7-minute long montage of Michael Jordan playing basketball with no Looney Tunes at all. it's a so really long. Really long intro.
So much basketball, and it's like, this is a movie for kids. How do you get the kids in? The cartoons. When are you going to show the cartoons? Maybe like 8 minutes into the movie. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? You open with bugs like immediately, just doing something funny. Like, it's
I think
so
this
funny.
Is us just misunderstanding how big Michael Jordan was at the time.
This is the thing. Like, I was talking to my boyfriend before we started recording, and he like, this missed him completely when he was a kid. And he was saying, he was like, I wonder why Irish kids watched it, because basketball was not a thing in Ireland. Like, and Michael Jordan was like barely a thing in Ireland. So it was like the Looney Tunes that would get you in. But like, to keep you in, you kind of need to get on board with basketball and with Michael Jordan. But then my counter to that was that, and I think this is the case with you, Richie, that anybody I know who did watch it as a child grew up to follow like the NBA seasons and like have a team and got really, really into watching basketball. So you can probably credit Irish people watching basketball with this film, do you know?
Yeah, so my fiance actually played basketball for Ireland at a under 18s and under 20s level. And I'm pretty sure Looney Tunes or Space Jam was the origin of that love. Well, her dad played as well for Ireland, but she loved this movie as a kid, and like yeah. has a tune squad. She just actually was good at the sport as well.
Yeah.
We've started watching some NBA now together, and I can see why so many people got into it. It's a very fun sport to watch because everything happens very quickly.
And you can follow it. It's like, it's not like getting into a new sport. Like, I don't know, I kind of sort of got into cricket like 2 years ago, and I was like, oh, I need to read like four books for this and have the Wikipedia page for cricket open like while I'm watching it. But with basketball, it's all very straightforward. I played like a little bit of it when I was a kid. I was really, really bad at it. But I think I was only playing it because all my friends watched Space Jam and wanted to play basketball, you know, like it was very, very impactful.
I was a little bit older than you, so like around 1996, there's a confluence of basketball related things happening, right? Okay. So there's the 96 Chicago Bulls are on this like legendary run, which does carry over. And they have like Dennis Rodman is also very, very visually appealing to children.
Yeah.
I remember like when I was like 6 or 7 going to the App Market in Waterford, which had all like the knockoff stuff, and getting an Air Jordan t-shirt, a gigantic Air Jordan t-shirt. It was too big for me, that I wore everywhere. And obviously like Air Jordans were a thing.
Yes.
Like the runners were huge. But also then MTV, all the music from this.
Yes.
This film was all over MTV in the music videos. I felt like I'd seen this film 50 times before I'd seen
That's
it because
true.
Of the videos for I Can Believe I Can Fly, which was a number one for like 7 weeks.
Yeah.
And Hit 'Em High and the Seal song for Like an Eagle as well were all huge. Also,
I remember
NBA
I Believe
Jam
I Can Fly
on the Mega Drive and SNES, huge at the time as well.
Yeah.
So everybody was into basketball through that as well. So there's just this perfect.
Perfect
storm. Everything's happening at once for everything. Yeah.
And in America, that's just your life. That's just being a teenager. It's like, yeah, we're into basketball. But here it's like when Pokemon first arrived and everyone's like, what's this? This looks fun.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was some way I could have watched it back then. I don't know. Like it was probably on some channel, probably at like 3 a.m. But I would play basketball like out with my basketball hoop, but I had no idea, besides Space Jam, I had no idea what basketball really was beyond like, I knew you had to shoot the ball and like MJ could dunk, but I wasn't pretending to be Michael Jordan out there. I was pretending to be like Bugs Bunny or like the Tasmanian Devil.
Oh, that's so sweet though. That's like, that's opening it to like people who don't want to be Michael Jordan, like, do you know?
Yeah.
Or like, because we didn't have like access to like watching basketball as kids, we didn't have role models. And the way you get kids into sports is you give them a role model and you're like, yeah, when you grow up, you can play like Pele or whatever. But the role models in this film are like Bugs Bunny and like Daffy Duck. And, you know, I did think that the only part in this film where they got close to having anything like a moral, which it does not have, was the scene in the locker room where he's drinking
secret stuff,
his like secret stuff. I was like, oh, I see what they're doing here. And then they very heavy-handedly follow that through, and then it's over, and then they just have to be good at basketball because they figured it out or whatever. I don't know. It's kind of left on the shelf. But that was like the only part of the film where I was like, ah, there's a moral. There's a moral here. And the moral is believe in yourself, I think. Kind of.
Or just like use your cartoon powers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they're not good at basketball in the second half. They just decide that we're going to murder these people with, like, for however dirty the Monstars were, they were playing basketball. They were dunking and they were like pushing people over. But then in the second half, the Looney Tunes are using dynamite and guns and a moped at one point.
Michael Jordan doesn't even win by being good at basketball. He wins, and not even by flying either, which he should have, but by stretching his arm really long. And it's like, that's not... I feel like he should have flown just to, you know, round out that sort of like thread. But
I feel like it was in his contract that he had to win. He had to do the win.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I don't think his ego will let like Lola Bunny get the winning point through teamwork. No. You know?
Yeah. Speaking of his ego, I was pleasantly surprised watching this, like growing up, by how, like, you know, he is bad at baseball. He gets pushed around by the Monstars. Like, he does some wacky slapstick stuff with the Looney Tunes. I don't think like Vin Diesel or anyone would do that now.
The Rock definitely does. Yeah.
The Rock wouldn't do it. John Cena would. John Cena can.
Yeah, John Cena. Yeah.
But there's something. It was a little bit endearing of him, like making himself look a little bit silly for parts of this, even though, as you say, he's the one that scores. But that's, I mean, he's Michael Jordan. That kind of makes sense for the movie.
Yeah. Did either of you look up what he got paid for the movie? I haven't.
No.
I'll look it up now.
It was probably a lot, but like he'd probably make that in 6 months on his shoes.
Yeah.
Like, easy. Like the amount of money he was getting in from endorsements, even when he retired, was insane.
Around $20 million. So
that's like, it's an $80 million budget. So that is like a quarter of the budget is just for Michael Jordan.
What? Oh my God.
But this was huge. This was the highest earning non-Disney animated film for a long time after it came out.
Yeah.
To the point, we're going slightly off topic, but there were some planned sequels. It did eventually get a sequel, which was bad, a couple of years ago.
I read a one-star review in The Guardian of it and decided not to watch it. I thought about watching it as research, and then I was like, no.
This version is a shallow, like the original Space Jam was a shallow cash grab that was fun and reasonably well put together. Like the talent involved was really reasonably well, like good. That's not a sentence. The talent involved was good. but the second one is a shallow cash grab that just doesn't work. Mm. And I think is like the worst instincts of Warner Brothers at the moment, where they're like, it's all about content and what do they call, like, rather than, they call like Game of Thrones and Looney Tunes IP, all of that sort of stuff. It kind of leans very heavily into that. But one thing,
don't Rick and Morty show up in the new one?
Yeah,
at some point. Yeah,
very briefly.
Yeah,
and then I think in the latest series of Rick and Morty, they kill those alternate versions of Rick and Morty, and they were like,
quite rightly.
They begged for death. They wanted it.
That's good. I like that.
There was a planned Tony Hawk sequel called Skate Jam that was supposed to come out in the early
2000s. Oh my God. Absolutely. You're talking my language. Now you're talking child me's language. I loved it.
Yeah. Now this, I don't know how far it got. And I think Tony Hawk wanted to do it. But that was like the height of him at like pro skater. And that kind of skateboard, like whatever basketball was in the like late or mid to late 90s, I think skateboarding was in the early 2000s. So you could definitely see that.
We had Skater Boy. It was a cultural reset.
I mean, that's your tie-in song right there. I don't know what.
100%. Oh my God. It's 7 minute opening sequence of Tony Hawk skating around to Skater Boy to open Skate Jam. Like... Why aren't people funding this?
They could have all the Jackass guys make a cameo.
Yeah,
Jackass versus Looney Tunes. There is a 2001 film that never happened.
Jackass versus Looney Tunes.
And the Jackass guys would be great in Looney Tunes land because they already do, like they're kind of cartoon characters.
They
already are
a cartoon.
And just drop an anvil on them, it's fine.
Yeah.
And like you could drop an anvil on Steve O in real life and he would probably be fine.
Today.
Yeah.
He'd be fine with it.
Yeah, so I just, you know, Warner Brothers have been making terrible decisions about what movies to release and what movies not to make since the early 2000s. And it's kind of funny because this came out of an ad. So apparently, I was looking up on this, like, there was a advert. So, what's it called? Michael Jordan did the famous advert with Spike Lee. Where he was for the Jordans shoes. And then the same guy who worked with him once decided to do a tie-in with, he was like Bugs, he was the guy who came up with that, that was a huge ad run. And then he was really into Looney Tunes, so he pitched Warner Brothers for an ad campaign that was called Hair Jordan. Solid pun. But and again, Warner Brothers had to be convinced they didn't want to like update Bugs Bunny's image to like modern times, but that was so successful. And you probably recognize, like, if you look up that ad campaign, I feel like it was on a load of t-shirts that we all had when we were kids. Like, it's Michael Jordan standing beside, and I think Elmer Fudd might be in it in a headband or something. But
that sounds familiar.
Because of
there's a barber's in Athlone called Hair Jordan. While I'm looking at it here, just to shout those guys out.
That's it. Yeah. That is a very 90s image. Like, it's very baggy shorts and baggy tank top.
Yeah. I have seen that in my life before, for sure. Maybe on a t-shirt.
But because of that, there was a period where Spike Lee was interested in collaborating on the script, but Warner Brothers blocked him because of something to do with how it was something to do with how one of his other movies was funded or something. He was in.
Was Malcolm X.
Was it Malcolm X? Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
But I really want to see the Spike Lee version of Space Jam. I like, if we're talking about things that got away, Skate Jam, and then the Spike Lee version of actual Space Jam is one thing I want to see.
But this is a universe that I would be willing to go to see like four films of, because like I've given up on the other ones that are floating around these days with the comic books and stuff. But I'm like, yeah, did someone update this? Like, do this again with the technology that we have now, and with like, you know, I learn
think the
from
movie
it.
You're talking about is Acme versus or Wile E versus Acme, which is the live action Looney Tunes movie that they've just buried. They shot it, and Warner Brothers won't release it as a tax write off.
And John Cena's in it. So
and John Cena and Will Forte and everyone.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know why,
Warner
but
Brothers
it's
always seem to be up to some shady shit. Whenever I see them in the news, it's always like Warner Brothers are burying this for tax. And I'm like, maybe I just saw that one.
They're doing it constantly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm
Batgirl
like,
Batgirl
as well.
David Zaslav is an evil, evil man who does not understand art.
What about just make a movie and release it and maybe we'll go see it? Like, imagine being like a script writer or a camera person or an actor or whatever. And this is your first movie and you're so excited, or you're like an established person, but you've never got to be a lead in a movie before and you get to do this. And then they're like, no, we're not going to release that. Like, just pretend to make a movie and don't have everyone show up for work every day. It's so shady. I don't know.
Tom Cruise now has an office on the Warner Brothers lot. And for all of his other faults, that man loves movies. So I feel like if Zaslav pulls that, like, he'd go in and strangle him with his bare hands.
Yeah, he loves movies. He really does.
Like, people made fun of him for that clip where someone asked him what he does about movies, or the clip from like sitting in like a private cinema, and he was like, "Movies, popcorn, movies." I'm like, I think that's genuinely what he's like. I think that's very relatable.
I love that him and someone else at the start of like Mission Impossible 5 or something, they like walk onto the screen and explain to people how to turn off the motion blurring thing. Someone who loves movies.
I have never identified with Tom Cruise more than when he talked about how to optimize your TV for home movie enjoyment. That's the only time I've seen him as a true human being.
Yeah, because I don't see the motion blur thing as strongly as my partner does. It drives him crazy. Like changed it on like my mother's television when we were visiting her. Like the whole thing, he cannot watch something if it's on.
My father caught me trying to change it on his television. He's like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "Nothing."
Yeah, even, I don't see it as much, but it's like I admire him coming out and being like, before you watch this film that we put a lot of effort into, take your remote, you dumb bitch, right, and scroll into your fucking menu. It's so funny.
But he was even like, on this TV it's called this, on this TV it's called like, he put effort into it. We can tangentially
millennial IT sun energy. Like, do you know how to fix the computer, Tom? Like,
consider this a small addendum to the vampire interview with a vampire episode of Juvenalia.
Please.
But because we've gotten way down the Tom Cruise rabbit hole, but even that outburst that came out during pandemic when he was like shouting at the crew. Obviously, you shouldn't shout at your coworkers, but what he was saying was like, we can be shut down at any given moment because unless you do the COVID protocols properly, and if you don't do that, like the insurers will pull this movie and we won't get to make it. And I feel like the unspoken thing is, if I am not on film risking my life, I will like actually see I will actually age to how old I am in real life and like wither like Dorian Gray.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like his films are the picture in the attic. Like he must be filmed at all times, and he must be so close to death during those. Like
I feel like it's a gypsy curse that he can only die if it's on screen, and this is him trying to he's been alive for millennia, and this is him trying to like end it.
He played the train in that first movie where everyone thought the train.
Once the camera was finally invented, he was so happy. Yeah.
Were you saying that, Andrea, that first train that was captured on film was actually trying to run him over? Yeah.
That was Tom Cruise. That was him the whole time. Mm-hmm. Okay, Space Jam.
We talked about the better version of this, which is Who Framed Roger Rabbit. But apparently the director of this, whose name has I've forgotten, Joe Pitka? Reached out to Robert Zemeckis to say, like, I'm doing this. Do you have any kind of advice? And Robert Zemeckis was like, don't do it. It nearly killed me. so that was, tried to warn him off.
Yeah. It does really seem like this, it's an impossible thing. Like whenever I see the humans and the cartoons interacting with each other, like no, it doesn't always work, and Michael Jordan looks like he's kind of looking to the left of where Bugs Bunny should be sometimes, and there's a lot of close-ups of his face that I don't know if they need to be there, and maybe they're just there because it was cheaper to shoot that than a whole sequence with the cartoons. But I still found myself really quite impressed with what they managed to do visually. Like, even though it looked really clunky to my like modern eyes or whatever, I was still like, wow, it really looks like they're fighting with this dog for this pair of shorts. Like, well done. Like, this is, you know, 1996. Like, Jurassic Park it is not, but...
It didn't make me want another Space Jam. It did make me want another Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And But I say that this feels like a monkey's paw thing where they will, and it'll be some awful, you know, something AI generated or something. But I just don't know who... Who is the, like the modern equivalent of Bob Hoskins that has that dramatic chops, but like the comedic energy is it Bryan Cranston maybe?
Cranston. Or what's his name? Deadpool. Not old enough.
Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
He did Detective Pikachu already though.
Oh, true. That's the movie I wanted.
Ryan Reynolds is great if he actually says what's on the script and is allowed to riff a little bit. I feel like he's at the point now where he just riffs his entire movies and it's getting a little bit grating.
I enjoyed Detective Pikachu, but mostly for because Pikachu was really cute and I just love watching him go around his little hat, and that I would have been fine with no plot, like just Pikachu, just like this is fine. 1 hour of this.
Speaking of riffs, specifically midriffs, there's one scene when Michael Jordan's in a hotel room when they're lit with Wayne Knight, and he is just completely shirtless and sweaty for no story reason whatsoever. It's just a full-on minute and a half Michael Jordan shirtless scene.
There's
and
a lot of sexy Michael Jordan.
And in grey sweatpants, yeah.
Yeah, which is the sluttiest thing a man can wear, as we all know.
Yes.
but like, there is a lot of close-ups of his like body, that I'd like something for the moms, like pretend like Lola's there for the dads and the Michael Jordan's there for the moms. Yeah. So
he was returning, or he had returned to basketball, I think, a season before this was shot, but it didn't go well because he returned halfway through the season and he was in baseball shape instead of basketball shape is how they explain it. So he got his trainer. They built a full size gymnasium, like a dome. They called it the Michael Dome on the WB lot that had a full size basketball court and a full gym. And apparently he was working with his trainer to get back into shape for the next season. So and the way he describes it, like every time they were in filming, he was either playing basketball or at the gym. So he may have just turned up to that shoot in gray sweatpants and shirtless and sweaty. And they were like, we don't have time. Get in there.
We need this. We need to get that. Yeah. He's like doing pull-ups in the gym. Like, you're going to put this in the movie, right? Like, I'm not doing this for nothing. Yeah. I mean, he looked great. Good. Like, well done him. Mm. But there was lingering at times. I was like... I don't know.
Again, the movie's only like...
Someone's gaze was being satiated.
Someone's gaze. The movie's
only 78 minutes long. They were like, just do a slow-mo pan across Michael Jordan.
Let's get Michael Jordan's abs in this as much as we possibly can. Yeah. What do you guys think the message of Space Jam is? I was about 15 minutes yesterday trying to figure out what I think like it is. And my takeaway is that the message is play basketball if you want. But I don't know.
I think the message is Michael Jordan, Michael Jordan, Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm. Michael Jordan's so cool.
Consume. Yeah.
Consume. Before I watched it, I asked Harry, I was like, have you ever seen Space Jam? And he was like, no. From what I remember, it was like a really long Nike advert. And I was like, oh God, okay. And then I went into it and it wasn't nearly as like commercial or like I was expecting like Josie and the Pussycats, but not satire. Right. Like really, like him drinking a Coke, you know, like zoom in on his Nikes. And there wasn't that much, like, I didn't feel myself being advertised to like very often. I don't think.
But if you were in the market for Space Jam merch, yeah, there's a load of Space Jam merch. Like Richie, you said you had like two jerseys and they had all the action figures for all of them as well. There wasn't a Bill Murray action figure, as far as I remember, which is a shame.
That feels like throwing money away.
Another missed opportunity. Because I had a Peter Venkman, so I could have had a Bill Murray.
Oh. Actually, just on the Peter Venkman, when Bill Murray shows up, and Danny DeVito's in this movie, by the way. I completely forgot about that.
Yeah.
But his line is, I didn't know Dan Aykroyd was in this picture. Yeah. And that made me laugh as well. Yeah. Do you know the, what's it called? The little... fashion show that Daffy Duck does, like when they're trying to figure out outfits.
Yeah.
I feel like there's one where he's like wearing streetwear or something in that was on like t-shirts and it was on these like dodgy market stalls for years. I feel like that was one of the defining pictures of the 90s. Well.
Bugs Bunny and
Jinkos
like,
is a thing. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. Yeah, but I didn't feel like it was like so down my throat. Like I didn't come away from it wanting to buy anything, you know. And I think if I watched it as a kid, it's not like if you sat a kid down in front of that, they'd be like, "Can I have a can of Coke?" Or you know, do you know that kind of way? It wasn't.
No, they would want a basketball or a jersey.
And that's fine.
Yeah. I was Googling Toon Squad jerseys, adult size, large.
I was considering it as well, yeah.
I have two friends who wore, I think it was a festival they went to, maybe Primavera or something, and they had like the matching jerseys, and at the back of his one it said Bugs, and the back of her one it said Lola, and loads of people wanted photos with them, which was really cute. I thought that was adorable.
That was nice.
Yeah.
Is that it? I think my last note was the shirtless Michael Jordan. Does anybody else have any other notes?
Only that the Danny DeVito character apparently, and again, this is another one that might be a conspiracy theory, but there's the owner or manager of the Bulls who Michael Jordan famously hated, who is a kind of short, heavyset guy with jowls. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of conjecture that the Danny DeVito character Swackhammer is kind of like a very thin pastiche of that guy, like a take that to that owner, which I mean he has also voiced by David Danny DeVito, which is might also explain some of the character modeling.
Yeah,
and that's the only other big. That's the only other voice cameo.
I think that's a nice tribute to the like the 30s and 40s Looney Tunes stuff, where they're full of references to stuff that we have no idea about anymore. And this one is full of 1995 ephemera that has no lasting culture memory except as a bit of Space Jam.
Is Peter Lorre in a crowd scene on any stage? Because I feel like he was all over the.
He's in every Looney Tunes song.
Yeah, I need to frame by frame that. I feel like he's legally obliged to be in every WB animation thing.
Yeah.
There was one other bit that struck me when I was watching it, because the animation was really beautiful in it. And it was when Michael Jordan's making the deal with the monsters that he will go to their planet and be in their theme park as a slave. And they keep using the word slave, which really kind of, I don't know, like they would have chosen a different word, I think, today.
But Tweety Bird saying it is cute, but it's still dark.
Every time they said it, I felt myself kind of tense up a little bit. I was like, oh, that just doesn't feel like it belongs here. But they were describing like, oh, you'll come to the planet and you'll have to play basketball against everybody who wants to, and you'll lose every time, and you'll have to sign autographs until like you're really tired or whatever. But they do a kind of a switch in the animation for that part, and it's really beautiful. It's like actually, really,
you're right.
It's quite scary, and I wonder if that was
added late or something, so they did it less like detailed, but more stylistically.
It was really stylized, and it kind of reminded me of like how you get taken out of that Harry Potter film where it changes into that really beautiful like CG
puppetry
thing. It's like the weird puppetry thing. And I was just like, oh, this is quite artistic and a little bit scary. I feel like if I was a kid, this part would scare me a bit more so than like the Monstars. And I do think the Monstars kind of generally were like a nice amount of scary. I reckon I would have been a little bit afraid of them, but I would have been able to get through it as a child, because I was like a very easy scared child. But they were scary when they were like big and like foreboding and
intimidating,
you know, towering over people. But were you afraid of them when you were a kid, Richie, or were you like...
No, I think because blue one is so kind of dim, and then like you do have the scary ones, the ones that breed fire, like the one where they crisp up what's the giant chicken called, Foghorn Leghorn.
Oh yes,
that's good. I don't think I found them scary as such. I think they're more kind of like comedic when I was when I watched it.
Speaking of comedic, I think I might have been a little bit frightened of them.
The one thing, one last thing is just when I watched this, I realized that no matter how many times I watch Looney Tunes stuff, when Porky Pig does that stumble over a word and then the last minute word switch, like he's going, can I get your John Hancock? He does it. I think he does it twice in this movie, and I've seen him do it dozens of times across any character. I laugh every time. Like
it's always,
and you
funny.
See it coming. It's always funny, as is little Tweety Bird saying like incongruous things like my poor little quanium.
Yeah, my quanium.
That makes me laugh every time.
And the Tweety Bird like grandma is there. She's on the bench.
Yeah. She's a cheerleader.
She's a cheerleader, yeah.
Oh, she's a cheerleader. She's there. And I'm like, yes. Good to see her here. I like this. I learned nothing about the rules of basketball from this, because it seemed like at any one moment there were at least 12 Looney Tunes on the court.
Two of which had guns.
Was that a
Pulp Fiction reference? The Elmer Fudd and Yosemite Sam.
For sure.
I did not get that when I was watching this at like 6 years old. Cool, surf music.
Yeah, exactly. Look, is it a film that I will tell people who haven't seen Space Jam that they need to watch immediately? Probably not. But if you know or love someone who this film meant a lot to them as a child and you want to go and watch it, I would recommend doing so, because like I feel like I understand a little bit more about like some of my friends from watching this. I'm like, okay, I kind of know who you were as a kid from watching this. It's like, as a movie, I'm like, I don't know. Like, you can't really judge this as a movie. It's not really a movie. It's kind of something else. But it was fun. It was a fun time. I wish I'd watched it as a kid. I bet I would have loved it.
Like, I'm saying this, I'm full on cognitive dissonance. Like, I've just spent an hour talking about lots of bad things about it, and then yet I'm still 10 out of 10 perfect music.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Like, that's the joy of it. That's like, God, the stuff I watched when I was a kid and I thought were like the best films ever. Very much not. But even to this day, I'm like, but it is the best film ever. You know, Disney's Robin Hood, for example. I'm like, yeah, perfect film. No notes.
All right. Richie, please tell us about Spirit Level. When it's out, what's it about, everything. And anything you want to plug, anything you want to do, please do it now.
Yeah. So I guess firstly, we mentioned it at the top. I am still on Twitter. I kind of feel like one of those mutant irradiated wolves that is still knocking about Chernobyl. But I'm there at Richie Craven, or R-I-C-H-Y Craven, C-R-A-V-E-N. Please follow me if you're still on there. We can huddle together for warmth. And later on this month, I'm not entirely sure when this is coming out, but 25th of April, I have a book coming out called Spirit Level. It is a very silly book about a guy who can see ghosts, but only when he's drunk. And if that kind of sounds up your street, please check it out.
I've read Spirit Level. It is excellent. I highly recommend it. Very, very highly recommend it. Really, really loved it. Andrea, please, where can we find you?
I have vacated the dark landscape. So you can find me on Blue Sky, Andrea.Cleary at Blue Sky. That's where I am right now. What about you, Alan? And what about Juvenalia?
I'm on Blue Sky and Instagram. Do more Instagram now. I'm more of a visual artist than a wordsmith these days, you know.
I've always said that about you.
Exactly, you know, I've got the eye now instead of the ear. But that doesn't matter at all. Juvenalia is Juvenalia_pod. It's still on Twitter, but like not really. It's on Blue Sky and Instagram as well. More importantly, we have a Patreon where we talk about what we started and finished recently on our bonus series, Started Finished, where we talk about a lot of computer games, a lot of books, more recent stuff, basically. It's a lot of fun. We enjoy doing it. We think people like listening to it. So it's €5 a month. And there's like 31 of them there so far. So plenty to be getting on with. So what else do we have to say? Thank you, Dee McDonald, for our artwork. Thanks, you to Cassie at Tall Tales for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Cassie.
And thank you again, Richard Craven, for letting us talk about Space Jam for an hour. Thank you. Bye, everybody. Bye.